Our last case is 10-508, 10-511, Flagstar Bank versus Airline Union's Mortgage Company. For the appellant is Mr. King.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to reserve 2 minutes.
All right.
May it please the Court, my name is Scott King. I represent Flagstar Bank. There are two issues in this appeal. First, under 2305.09, does a claim for professional negligence accrue on the date of the negligent conduct or on the date the negligent conduct causes actual injury? The second issue is, when a lender sues an appraiser of collateral, when does the lender's claim accrue? The answer to the first question is, under 2305.09, all elements of a claim, including actual damages, must be present in order for the claim to accrue. The answer to the second question is, when a lender sues an appraiser because the collateral was undervalued, the lender has no claim and has no actual damages until the lender has to resort to the collateral and the collateral is insufficient to pay off the then balance due. First issue, requires the Court to define the term accrued in 2305.09. For four reasons, the Court should define the term accrued to require actual damages be present. Reason number one, that was the common law definition. At common law, in order for a claim to accrue, all elements, including actual damages, had to be present. 2305.09 does not have a special definition of the word accrued. As a result, the Court should apply the common law definition. Reason number two, when the General Assembly wants to have a time limitation to be based on something other than the common law definition, it expressly states so. It enacts a statute of repose, or it defines the word accrued within the statute itself.
If I'm correct in understanding what you're asking for, if you have a bank issues a 30-year loan and has an appraisal done, and there is a default 25 years later, you're claiming the bank can go after the real estate agent or the appraiser and allege that they improperly appraised the property and damaged the collateral?
That would be a highly unlikely scenario.
Don't ask me a highly unlikely.
It would be highly unlikely because the damages rule only occurs if the value of the collateral is less than the balance then due. In that situation you just posited, 25 years into the loan, it is highly likely that the loan would be paid off to the point where there would not be
Let's say they do a 10-year loan with a balloon payment, and at 9 years they default.
The answer, Your Honor, is there are situations where you could have a late springing damages, but for reasons that I'll get into when we talk about the second issue, that is the nature of the claim and the nature of the word accrued, because actual damages against an appraiser of collateral do not occur until you actually have to resort to the collateral.
So you basically want an unlimited, open-ended statute of limitations.
No, Your Honor, that is not correct. We only want the statute of limitations to apply like it applies to all other claims when we actually have actual damages. The third reason for accrued is it's consistent, the definition of accrued to require actual damages, it's consistent with the Court's precedent, in particular the Coons case. The fourth reason is when the Court's faced with competing statutory interpretations of a term, one of which will require the Court to enter into a constitutional analysis and the other which does not, the Court's bias should be towards the interpretation that does not require a constitutional analysis.
Let me go back to your accrued damages argument. You buy a piece of property, the appraiser says it's worth $100,000, the property is actually only worth $50,000. Even though the damages, in your theory, the accrual only happens upon any sale where your bank has less collateral, but at the time that the evaluation is made at $50,000, hasn't your bank already suffered damage because your bank now has a piece of property that's worth less than they believed? Why is that not accrual?
I'll be happy to get to the second issue directly given that question. We'll stick with your example. Appraisal is of 100, property is worth 50, and let's assume it's a conventional loan where there's been a loan of 90%. So the balance due is 90. Let's assume that the day after we bought the loan or the day after we made the loan, we find out the appraisal was negligent. We knock on the appraiser's door. We would like our $50,000, please. You said it was worth $100,000. It's only worth $50,000. I'd like $50,000. The appraiser's going to say, wait a second. I only appraised collateral. I didn't appraise the value of the loan. My statements only went to the value of the collateral. If I were to pay you the $50,000 now and the borrower repaid the loan, you'd have a double recovery. I can't pay you now. Your claim hasn't accrued now. Let's roll the clock forward. Let's assume we go to the date of default. Borrower goes into default. The bank comes to the appraiser and says, Mr. Appraiser, we'd like our $50,000 now. Loan's in default. We want our $50,000. The appraiser is going to say, wait, you still have no damages. The borrower could cure the default. If the borrower cures the default, you have double recovery. Let's move the clock forward even more. We wait to the date we file the foreclosure action. We knock on the appraiser's door. We just sued the borrower for foreclosure. Mr. Appraiser, we'd like our $50,000. The appraiser will once again correctly say, you still have no damages. The borrower could redeem the property before there's a foreclosure. The property could sell at foreclosure for more than the balance due. You still have no damages.
But you could also argue that if you default and you find there's $40,000 under appraisal, you have an action against the borrower for the balance, so there's still no damages.
We still have the action against the borrower, Your Honor, but the collateral effectively serves as an insurance policy. The collateral ensures that the borrower's creditworthiness will ultimately, even if the borrower defaults, will ultimately be paid to the sale of the collateral. There is no other accrual date. If you wait until the borrower goes into default, he can cure. If you wait till the foreclosure action, the collateral could be sold at foreclosure. You're at this point left with the date when the lender resorts to the collateral. In this
case, negligence consists of four elements, and it would be up to the claimant to establish the fourth element, the damages.
We're I'm in agreement, yes.
And we've said in the Jacobs case that professional negligence accrues at the time of the wrongful conduct. And we've been pretty consistent with that in other areas of professional negligence. Are you asking us to carve something out more specially for appraisers?
No, Your Honor. Actually, I'm asking you to apply the Coons case, which was a case against an insurance broker who acquired insurance that didn't provide coverage. I'm asking you to follow the language in the Cedar case, which expressly acknowledged that a claim could accrue after the negligent conduct.
Well, why don't we follow Jacobs?
If Jacobs is Investors REIT 1?
Yes.
That's why I wasn't tracking. I apologize. In Investors REIT 1, the claim was brought against accountants. The claim was, accountants, you didn't find out that there had been misappropriations.
Right.
The claim accrued the very day the accountants issued the audit showing that everything was okay. The money at that point was already gone. Investors REIT 1 never addressed the topic of springing damages. It didn't address the Coons case. In Investors REIT 1, the damages occurred simultaneously with the negligent conduct.
Well, why don't we use that in the example that Justice Stratton posed to you? And the damages occurred when the appraiser said the property was worth $50,000 more than it actually was worth.
Because as to the appraiser, we would not have had a legal claim.
Why not? Why couldn't you claim that this was negligent assessment of value, and the damage is the $50,000 difference?
Your Honor, because that would, in one sense, my bank would be overjoyed with that, because that would mean that I could sue every appraiser, get the
all
money,
the time,
and still collect the loan balance. I'd get to have double recovery. And while I'm sure my bank would be overjoyed with that, that's just not a realistic way of assessing things. In Investors REIT 1, the court never addressed the springing damages, the delayed damages in the Coons case. In fact, Cedar, 4 or 5 months after Investors REIT 1, the court reaffirmed the viability of that rule.
Well, counsel, you're really damaged when you rely on the appraisal to expend loan $100,000, and it's only worth $50,000. You're damaged at that point. You don't know it, but you're damaged at that point.
I have no legally cognizable claim against the appraiser because the appraiser didn't appraise the loan. This is no different than in the Coons case, where they obtained an insurance policy for a piece of equipment, or at least they thought they did, paid premiums for it, and ultimately there was no coverage. The court in that case said that there was no legally cognizable damages until the equipment was damages. Same thing here. We, at least vis-a-vis the appraiser, have no damage to the interest in which he was involved. He wasn't appraising the loan. He was only appraising the collateral.
But for his appraisal, though, you would not have acted.
But for the appraisal, we normally would not have made the loan, at least on the same terms that we did.
Right, right.
But having said that, we still...
Then a week later find out that it wasn't worth $100,000. But you still have a third party who were the property owner.
Your Honor, while that's true, what you would be authorizing the bank to do then is, as Justice O'Donnell suggested, sue everybody and get double recovery.
Well, no, because at that point I would think it would be up to the homeowners to sue the appraiser, not the bank.
Homeowners are not damaged at all. They got the money. The entity who would be damaged is the one who bought the insurance policy, the collateral.
Counsel, in this case, I believe you purchased mortgages on the market, I guess. What if this court should say that the statute of limitations is 4 years from the time the appraisal was made? Does that alter the bank's practice in terms of the market for these mortgages?
Well, Your Honor, one of the loans was kept for the portfolio and we sold the other one, but would it alter the bank's practice on the initial purchase? I do not know, because the bank relies on the appraisal, and I simply don't know the answer to your question.
But wouldn't it necessarily have to, because there's a lot of mortgages that are sold to a secondary market? So if the decision of this court is that it's 4 years from the date of the appraisal, then those banks that attempt to sell the paper on a secondary market, unless that second bank goes out and gets another appraisal, they are all at risk once that 4 year expires, if it's 4 years from the date of the appraisal.
The appraiser would know that he's off scot-free after 4 years, regardless of the negligence. And if the loan went into foreclosure, but the foreclosure process took longer than 4 years, the appraiser would still be off scot-free. And given the congestion in our courts, that's a situation that is readily...
So those secondary purchases of mortgages are at huge risk and will have to change their practice or incur additional expenses before purchasing that paper.
That would be correct.
How do we balance... I mean, there's reasons for statute of limitations. We have some very tight ones for doctors, a year, you know, regular negligence. And yet you want sort of one that's even longer than statute of reposes that have been passed. And how do we balance your claim of accrual of damages versus all the issues that are the reasons for statute of limitations?
Your Honor, with respect, that is not a balancing for the court. That's a balancing for the General Assembly. The General Assembly has passed the statute using the common law definition. We are asking that the common law apply.
So we define what is accrual then. And we may maybe look at the accrual issues in terms of the public balancing, or is it strictly a legal issue?
Your Honor, I think it's strictly a legal issue because the statute says accrued. If the General Assembly wants something other than the common law definition, it has repeatedly given a different definition.
You kept referring to the Coons case?
Coons, K-U-N-Z.
What is the whole citation? Because I can't find it in your...
It's a 1982 case from this court.
Coons versus what?
Buckeye Insurance Company.
That was a per curiam, correct? A very brief case. I know you keep referring to it, but it seems to be a bit different. Not a whole lot of discussion about this delayed damage theory that we're talking about here.
It was a per curiam, Your Honor. There were two dissenters. Having said that, the discussion in Coons is exactly on point in that we're talking about a situation where there is a delay between recoverable damages in the negligent act. To give you another example, the conflict cases are all accountant cases where the accountant has negligently prepared the return. More than 4 years later, the IRS assesses penalties. And the issue is the accountant liable for the penalties? Well, if we're going to define accrual that it occurs upon the negligent act, the clients are going to be able to sue the accountants and say, pay me the penalties the IRS hasn't assessed yet. It's the same concept. Maybe there will be damages later on, maybe there won't. But again, what we're looking at is whether or there are in fact damages before you say that there's accrued. The consequences of saying something else just generate a whole host of problems.
In let's take a tort action where somebody is injured. You don't know in the future what those damages are. You know that they have some damages or they may have some damages. So you bring in experts to evaluate what the future risk is, what the likelihood, et cetera. Here, your damage actually accrued, if you look at it in one way, when that appraisal was too less. Why can't the proof then just be, okay, the percentages of people that default, the risks, this, that, just like you have to prove in a physical injury?
Because the appraiser would say, I didn't appraise the loan, I only appraised the collateral, and my risk and what my statements related to only went to the insurance policy.
That doesn't, to me, that's not a good defense. That's still, that just goes to the damage occurred because we based our contractual action on your evaluation and the fact that you just appraised the property. That's part and parcel why we gave the loan.
If that were the case, then as Judge O'Donnell would point out, we'd have a claim against every appraiser that we believe were negligent, regardless of whether the loan ever went into default, and even though we had been paid in full.
But to Justice Stratton's point,
$50,000.
We litigate future damages all the time. In a variety of ways. Still the burden of the claimant to establish by a preponderance of evidence what the future damages would be. And we can use experts and others to assist us in bringing that to the fore.
But in every situation that you, I think, would have in mind, there would be a case where there was present damages and we're trying to estimate future damages. Here, we're not trying to estimate future damages. We're trying to determine whether those damages ever will come into existence at all.
Back to your thing about the legislature and them setting a specific term of years. In a tort action, the legislature has defined a specific time period within which a tort may be brought. In this section, they have used the words accrue. And your argument is that if the legislature wants a more definitive time period, they can state that.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. You should apply the common law definition absent a special statutory definition.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Gehring?
It's lunchtime.
I understand that. I'm checking my watch.
I now have 14 minutes.
I want to make sure I don't go over.
We'll let you
Madam
know.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, counsel. We'll try to bring this as succinctly as we can. What the appellant is asking, really, is that you overrule the investor's REIT Jacobs case. And we think that that's the case that is controlling in this case. The majority of the appellate courts have followed that case since it was decided in 1989, and the court in the Jacobs case gave well-reasoned a number of reasons why it was at that time stating that claims against professionals accrue on the date of the negligent act, and 4 years is the time to bring the action.
Counsel, then the bank finds itself 10 years later, holding the bag, literally, with a mortgaged property, a default by the owners, and they're out whatever money they lent that was in excess of the actual value of the property.
Perhaps, and that's. There are
and there is no recourse there against anyone but the homeowners for a deficiency judgment.
Or in this case, Your Honor, we want to keep in mind another fact here, is that Mr. Reinhold, my client, did not do appraisals for Flagstar. He did appraisals for another entity called Airline Union Mortgage. Those mortgages were then bought by Flagstar somewhere down the road. So in this case, Flagstar had claims against all of those brokers that were involved. Those people were part of this case but were later dismissed, had claims against the mortgage company, airline unions, and had claims against the borrowers. And so he is, Mr. Reinhold, my client, is probably fourth down the list. And so in that case, there are causes of action against others who may be liable, but certainly they would be out as to Mr. Reinhold.
What would the basis be for Flagstar if in their actions against the first mortgage company, airline union?
Because there are agreements to buy back those mortgages or to make good on them if they don't pay off. And so they have a contractual arrangement when they go ahead and buy those mortgages. Once again, that's not an issue. We haven't litigated that. But that's typically the case, and that's why they were
But that's
in.
The basis. You're not arguing that there's a basis that somehow airline union was negligent in accepting an appraisal that was negligently done, and there's a chain reaction of occurrences. You're not talking about that kind of a—
There could be, but I don't think that's where we are in this case.
You're doing it contractual between the purchaser on the secondary market.
Correct.
Let's say that they bought this loan within 3 years and realized that this property is underappraised. How do they prove their damages? Do they have to have a default first, or can they say, this property is undervalued, I'm going to sue the broker right now?
I think in that case, Your Honor, if they were within the four-year statute of limitations, they could come in and say, Mr. Reinhold, you were negligent. We have some actuarial basis, if you will, for determining our loss. And that, once again, it's sort of speculative. I would acknowledge that. But certainly they could try to make a case that, in the example we had earlier, $50,000, a $50,000 less. We put out $50,000 more than we should have. It's going to be lost if we don't recoup it from you because of your negligence. Once again, like any other negligent claim, that would be it.
Counsel, you've indicated that you feel you've got one very strong case decided by this court that means you win. If we just step back and think about the overarching considerations of statutes of limitations, statutes of repose, what's fair, when should the clock start running? To have a good system of justice, we don't want to decide cases so that you have premature filings of lawsuits, but on the other hand, we don't want to reward people who slept on their rights. And perhaps the right place for the clock to start running here, if there's a four-year statute of limitations, is when they get the file, they've bought the loan, presumably that includes, or does that paper all stay behind the appraisal? They would have presumably a right to inspect the files before they buy the loans, and presumably they would become the owner of your client's appraisal at the point they buy the loan. So if they do any due diligence at that point, either before or after they buy the loan, as we have in some cases, a discovery rule applies. You know, you didn't know you had the sponge in your belly until somebody finds it there. You had a bellyache, but you didn't know why.
I think what you suggest—
Would that be a reasonable answer to this, that the statute starts to run at the point they acquire an ownership interest in your client's work product?
I think what you're saying is that at the time that this particular plaintiff bought the loan, should have inspected or done its own appraisal.
What we call it is known or should have known.
Right. And that's the time. That's one way of looking at it. Yeah. But I think if you go down that route, now you're changing and you are coming to a situation where you're changing really what the legislative intent was. And this court has discussed legislative intent.
Well, how do we know? I mean, there are so many.
Well, I can only go back to
permeations of what a statute of limitations or a statute of repose. Right.
And I have to point back to the to the Jacobs case, and the investors Jacobs case, in which this court said, "We're going. This it is a matter of statutory interpretation. Accrual means the date of the negligent act." Granted, Mr. King pointed out, the statute says accrual. It doesn't say when it occurs. But accrual has always been, in negligence cases, the date of the negligent act. And this court has always stayed behind that. And then because the statute in issue, 230509, has its own discovery portion in it for fraud, this court in our investor said, we're going to not read into that additional language that the legislature could have put in there that provide for a discovery rule in these types of cases, in professional negligence cases. That was the obligation of the legislature to do that if it so intended, but it did not do so. We're not reading that requirement, discovery, or excuse me, that type of discovery clause into the statute. And that's where we get to the statutory interpretation. That's why I say you would be changing the statutory interpretation. In our view, you would be really upsetting stare decisis from those cases. And it's not only the investor's case, it's Grant Thornton that came afterwards, and all of the appellate decisions that followed those cases and relied on that reasoning. And certainly the professionals.
But in the Reed case, wasn't there some relationship with the accountant or some privity or
There certainly was some privity, I think, believe that somebody said that they there was I forget, but it was actually the accountant's work product that the plaintiff was relying on in terms of some action that it took in terms of taking further steps, and certainly there was a privity. We don't have a privity here. I think, you know, that would be another issue somewhere down
the road. Mr. Gearing, how do you respond to Mr. King's position that, oh, if you had a four-year statute of limitations, which is what you're advocating, we follow from the date of the negligent act, there would be no ability to prove damages. In other words, the loss hadn't occurred at the time the property was acquired. It was subsequent to that.
I think I answered this earlier, but I think in terms of what I think Justice Stratton brought up early on, in which a number of the courts have said, mostly the appellate courts, and I'll point out, I think Schnipple is one of them, Chandler is another one, those courts said the damages occur at the date of the negligent act. The plaintiff does not have the collateral at that time that it believed it had. Now, the question is how do you prove it? And I think the issue becomes is it's just like any other case. If you can actuarially, by expert opinion, saying, well, this mortgage is worth X, whereas what it had been before, maybe that's the damages that a jury would get instructed on, or a court would apply in that particular situation.
If I might follow up on that, because the issue for me comes down to this. If you look at the Fifth District in J.P. Morgan Chase versus Lanning, the court there was very clear that all actions don't accrue until the plaintiff suffers an injury. So following Justice O'Donnell's question, when does the injury occur in the scenario you were just talking about?
On the date in the negligent act, Your Honor.
Which is when they're under-collateralized, which you don't know until you have a default on the mortgage.
No, you would know immediately if let's take the example we were given earlier. If the mortgage company in this case had gone out and when it purchased the mortgage and it claimed it relied on my client's appraiser, mm-hmm. and if it then said, well, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. It doesn't look like you have enough here. This property doesn't look like. Let's get another appraisal on it. At that particular point, first of all, the plaintiff can protect itself, but the case law has always been, and once again is, and this is why we have some real problems with those three cases, they imposed a delayed damages rule in which that has never been the law out of this court to say that the negligent act they said the negligent act isn't the date of accrual.
So your remedy, as you would propose to this court, is that every secondary purchaser of mortgages would have to verify that every appraisal underlying the collateral is accurate on the date that they purchased the loans?
It might if they – or they've got 4 years to do this, too, keep Your Honor. That's the other thing, too. We're looking at a statute of limitations that is very generous.
So, counsel, the first mortgage first bank mortgage company has 4 years from the date the appraisal is made, according to your scenario. Then, during that four-year period of time, they sell it on the secondary market, and then a new four-year statute starts running to the benefit of the secondary purchaser?
No, Your Honor. Our position is that the negligence claim, the claim negligence occurred when the appraisal was done.
So that you're not adhering to Justice Pfeiffer's known or should have known trigger?
No, I'm not adhering to that. I think it is another way that it could be dealt with, perhaps legislatively, because I think it is a suggestion that sense, but legally
it's a discussion of what accrue means. And is it when you knew or should have known? And you want to say, no, just when the appraisal happened. It's 4 years, no matter who owns that mortgage on down the road.
That is correct.
Okay.
Because we're going on, and these things get sold, so you can't keep triggering. This is an important issue to the professionals in
sure.
this state. They've been operating under, and we have a brief here from the board, the Realtors Association, but a lot of other professionals are impacted by
it. We had a case a little different because it was a trespass case, but when somebody fiddled with the upstream drainage, damage doesn't really. The people don't know how they were harmed until it rains a lot. A lot more than normal. Again, we were into the same thicket as to when should the clock start to run. Could also be in environmental cases. Somebody, your neighbor does something that comes over on you. You don't know it. Or you do know it. But you figure there's no harm until the government changes the law and says you got to dig it all up. What should be this? Should it always be when the tort occurs?
Your Honor, in this case, yes, it should, because what we do have a statute involved. It's statutory interpretation. We do not believe that this court can change what the legislature has stated in terms of 2305.09. I think my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. King, you have used all of your time. Take 30 seconds.
In addition to Coons, Velada is another case in this court that recognized the actual damages rule. The court needs to resolve the conflict between the 5th, 6th districts in their interpretation of Investors REIT 1 and Velada. Justice Pfeiffer raised the issue of judicial economy. That's dealt with in the Slavin case from California. One of the reasons for the rule that we are advocating, which has been adopted in California, is judicial economy, unless we have people suing prematurely whenever there's a default. The cases that counsel referenced, Hader and the other cases involving surveyors, were all purchase cases, not collateral cases, and they are different. What happens if we sue him prematurely? That's also in the record, Your Honor. I had a motion for summary judgment filed against me because there had been no default.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We will adjourn, Marshall.